This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight...
The chairperson of the Electoral Commission held a press briefing and told Ghanaians that they are waiting for a few of the pink sheets, about 60 of them, to come from the regional centers. And then from there, once they cross-check the figures, they will announce the person who won the presidential election. But from provisional results provided, it appears main opposition leader Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo has won the presidential election.
That's VOA's Peter Cloti with the latest developments on Ghana's elections. We'll have full details coming up.
Also, violence escalates in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon, and a new report indicates conflict, violence, and natural disasters are the causes for the displacement of 12.5 million people in Africa.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Ghana's Electoral Commission is expected to announce the winners of Wednesday's presidential and parliamentary elections this evening. Provisional results are being released one constituency at a time. The commission says that's the normal procedure based on a multiple-stage verification process to ensure all the vote counts are valid. The opposition NPP party said its own tabulations show presidential challenger Nana Akufo-Addo is headed for victory. The ruling NDC party said the current president, John Mahama, is doing well across the country and condemns the NPP's claim as irresponsible. Our colleague Peter Cloti is in Accra following election results. He provides us with the latest update.
The chairperson of the Electoral Commission held a press briefing and told Ghanaians that they are waiting for a few of the pink sheets, about 60 of them, to come from the regional centers. And then from there, once they cross-check the figures, they will announce the person who won the presidential election. But from provisional results provided, it appears main opposition leader Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo has won the presidential election.
What is the mood of the people considering this?
I rode across town in the capital city, Accra, and it's been quiet. But when I got to the residence of the opposition leader, it was that of jubilation. And people are celebrating, tooting their horns, their car horns for that matter. And then when I got to the residence of John Dramani Mahama, the incumbent president, there were some jubilation there, but not as much as that of the opposition leader. And he came out, the president came out and said they are just waiting for the announcement by the Electoral Commission chief about who won the Electoral Commission. But whichever way it goes, he says he is ready to accept it, and that his party, and for that matter, the supporters, are law-abiding citizens, and they will do as the will of the people demand.
If the challenger is declared the winner by the Electoral Commission, will this be considered an upset, or is this something that was expected to happen?
Well, it will be considered an upset. However, the ruling party, or for that matter, incumbent President John Dramani Mahama, was overly confident that Ghanaians will repose confidence in him for a second time to re-elect him. It was not so. From the provisional results provided across the country, the system was so transparent, you could clearly sit home and tabulate who will win, except that when there is what we call overvoting, the Supreme Court has ruled that if more people voted that can be accounted for on the voter list, then that polling station results would have to be invalidated. It remains to be seen how many of them will be invalidated, but as it stands now, currently, it looks like Nana Akufo-Addo is going to be elected the new president of Ghana.
What were some of the issues at hand that people want addressed there?
Well, the immediate issues that are at hand are high unemployment rate and corruption. These are the two main issues, and the economy, basically. These are the three main issues that the two or more parties fought and presented their ideas to the people of Ghana. But it seems that Ghanaians decided to choose Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo, the main opposition leader, as having the best policies. Because his victory is overwhelming, because they have won quite a sizable amount of number of people in the Ghanaian parliament. And even in the strongholds of the NDC, the NPP made some significant gains in there. So it's a resounding victory if the provisional results are anything to go by.
How are some of his policies different from the president's?
Allegations were leveled against officials that were around President John Dramani Mahama, and Ghanaians wanted heads to roll. However, the president said that these are just perceptions and they have not been proven yet. Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo, the main opposition leader, said he's going to set up an independent prosecutor's office, which will go after those who are alleged to have stolen public funds, who have enriched themselves, who have used government contracts that they inflated, allegedly, to pad their pockets. And then he said there will be one district, one factory, which means that every district in the country, they're going to provide not only electricity, but provide factories that will create jobs for the unemployed youth. So most people, I think, from the provisional results we have, believed in what he said rather than the president.
With the president saying that he will concede if, in fact, the challenger is declared the winner, do you expect any violence?
There wouldn't be violence, as some people have been speculating. The police have been deployed across the country. Not that there have been any incidents of violence or anything like that, but to prevent any act of violence. Things have been pretty quiet and Ghanaians are going about their business as usual with a little to no fanfare at all. Majority of the people, it's business as usual. Let me put it that way.
That was our colleague Peter Clote speaking with me from Accra.
Several people have been killed and hundreds either arrested or missing in the capital of the northwest region of Cameroon. This as violence escalates in the English-speaking regions of the country. Parts of the population is protesting the use of the French language, which they say is eroding the English language, and they are demanding a return to federalism, while others are asking for secession from the Republic of Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Protesters in Bamenda, capital of the northwest region of Cameroon, shout as they carry a man who was shot in the leg to the hospital. They came out to stop the ruling CPDM party and the Prime Minister of Cameroon, Philemon Yang, from organizing what they called a peace rally to stop them from protests that started last month. Yewan Petra, a resident of Bamenda, says the military shot at protesters who were hoisting blue and white flags as an indication the English-speaking regions want to separate from the French-speaking region of Cameroon.
The people of Bamenda are hoisting a flag that is not recognized. You cannot in a nation hoist a flag that is not recognized by the people. If it was a white flag, I would understand it is for peace. Hoisting a flag that symbolizes some kind of a secessionist attitude is going to provoke the military.
The government said two people died, but some residents and media outlets reported that there were at least seven deaths. They are protesting what they call the overbearing influence of French in the bilingual country. In 1961, people of today's northwest and southwest English-speaking regions of Cameroon voted whether to join Nigeria, which had already obtained independence from Britain, or the Republic of Cameroon, which had obtained independence from France. The vote resulted in the English-speaking regions becoming part of French-speaking Cameroon, and the country practiced a federal system of government. English and French became the official languages of Cameroon. Ebune Charles, historian at the University of Yaoundé, says since 1972, when a new constitution was adopted, replacing a federal state with a unitary state, French-speaking Cameroonians have failed to respect the linguistic and cultural nature of the minority English-speaking Cameroonians.
We were supposed to have predominantly English-speaking administrators in the predominantly English-speaking regions of the Northwest and the Southwest. That is not the case. We were expecting official documents signed in both languages. That is not the case. Presidential decrees come only in one language. If you look at the level of the military, this is where it is so scandalous. It is just in one language, but we are in a bilingual country.
Ebune says other grievances are that the country's currency is printed only in French. Notice boards, even in the English-speaking regions, are mostly in French, and more than 70% of radio and TV programs in the state media are in French. The ongoing protests were started by lawyers against the overbearing influence of the French language. They asked for French-speaking judges who are not of the common law system to be transferred out of court in the English-speaking regions, stating that justice cannot be rendered when the judge, the advocate, and the suspect cannot communicate. They also asked for the Ojada business law used by French African countries to be translated into English. When their requests were not granted, they went to the streets and refused defending clients in court. Teachers also got involved, stating there is an overbearing influence of French in schools in the English-speaking regions to the detriment of the English language, and supported the lawyers when the government failed to listen. They refused teaching. Professor George Dobgima Nyamdi, politician and former presidential aspirant, says the situation degenerated because the government has refused to listen to the cries of English-speaking Cameroonians.
At the moment we are speaking, kindergarten children are out of school. Secondary school children are out of school. University students are out of school. These are in-house problems we need to address. All those categories of people are not mad. This country needs to tell its kindergarten children why they are at home. I'm saddened, horrified, but not surprised. I'm saddened that members of our society are aggrieved. Lawyers are not attending to clients. That's the legal system being undermined. If things like this happen to a country, it means there's something fundamentally wrong that must be addressed.
As the strikes continue, with violence leading to the closure of schools, universities and markets in the English-speaking zones of Cameroon, the Catholic Church has been calling for dialogue. The Archbishop of Bamenda, Cornelius Esua Fontem, says
the Prime Minister has accepted those conditions. He is setting up a committee. He has appointed the chairperson of the committee. So why not give him a chance? There is a move of dialogue, and we should not refuse that move. We want the government to prove that they too are coherent.
It is not the first time English-speaking Cameroonians are protesting. In 1984, they created an association called the Cameroon Anglophone Movement to press for a return to the federal system, but eventually started calling for independence. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa has ended his two-day visit to Burundi, where he attempted to renew the inter-Burundi peace dialogue. However, exiled opposition leaders say they were discouraged by his comments today in Bujumbura.
Burundi opposition leaders who are in exile say they were devastated to hear they were not likely to take part in the regional mediated dialogue. Former Tanzanian leader Benjamin Mkapa, who was appointed by the five East African presidents to facilitate the talks, issued a statement criticizing those who failed to recognize President Nkurunziza's government. Mkapa said Burundians made their choice through last year's elections.
Elections were held, court cases were raised, including the East African court, and they all said this is a legitimate process which has come to a legitimate conclusion. So those who think I'm the one that is rendering legitimacy are absolutely out of their minds. Quote me, they are absolutely out of their minds. Ambassadors come here, they present credentials to President Nkurunziza. The Security Council resolutions recognize him as the president of this country. So what is this foolishness?
Opposition leaders in exile say that President Nkurunziza's term was unconstitutional and that it undermined the 2000 Arusha Agreement that brought an end to Burundi's civil war. The National Council for the Respect of the Arusha Agreement for Peace and Reconciliation and the Rule of Law in Burundi is an umbrella body of 22 political parties. Most members are in exile. It said that the East African Community-led dialogue has failed. Jeremiah Minani is the communications officer for the group known as SENARED.
MUCAPA's statement are terrible. It's completely catastrophic. From us to hear those words from a mediator in a conflict, it's heartbreaking because he already took position to the Burundi government. That means he's no longer qualified to lead the process.
Minani's comments came after MUCAPA said that those who were accused in the failed coup will have no chance to take part in the dialogue.
First, it is clear that, you know, people who have been indicted or charged with the attempted coup, this is not the time to talk to them. Well, the Arusha one was taking place because there wasn't enough common understanding between the parties inside and those external, particularly the ones who are non-violent. My task has been to try to see how I can bring the two sides together. And I think we have found an opening where we may be able to agree on who should participate because they are key to a new dispensation.
However, SENARED communication advisor warned that MUCAPA's remarks could only lead the country to more violence.
Not only with African Union, but also on UN side to make sure that, if possible, an inclusive dialogue is organized to make sure that this crisis ends politically, to avoid a military confrontation, which obviously may occur if an inclusive dialogue is not organized.
As the regional mediated inter-Burundi dialogue was the only hope for the opposition in exile to actively contribute to ending the political crisis, opposition hope seems to be fading. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Swuhib, 22 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Ghana's Electoral Commission is expected to announce the winners of Wednesday's presidential and parliamentary elections this evening. And violence escalates in the English-speaking region of Cameroon. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Nearly 12.5 million people were displaced in 21 African countries at the end of 2015. A new report blames that on conflict, violence, and natural disasters. The figures for 2016 probably won't be any better. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The Internal Displacement Monitoring Center says about 9,500 people are uprooted from their homes every day in Africa. Each displaced person, it says, represents a personal tragedy and a challenge for local, national, and international responders. Alexandra Bilak is director of the IDMC.
The reason why we decided to publish this Africa-specific report was also to respond to calls from our partners at the African Union who have been asking us to provide a more precise picture of this crisis at the continental level.
Africa is second only to the Middle East, where people are forced to flee.
It is suffering from repeated displacements caused by conflict and violence across a number of countries, but it is also affected by displacement caused by other triggers and other factors like natural hazards. We found that in 2015, 1.1 million of these displacements had been caused by disasters triggered by these rapid onset hazards like floods, Malawi being one of the countries affected. but also by slower onset disasters like droughts.
Bilak says some nations have perennial displacement problems.
Nigeria, DRC, South Sudan, CAR, Sudan, Somalia. When it comes to natural hazards and development projects, we're looking at a much more geographically comprehensive picture, I would say. Of course, when it comes to drought, we're looking mostly at the Horn of Africa and the Sahel. When it comes to development projects, although we don't have any comprehensive data at the moment, we do know that development is causing displacement across the board.
3.5 million people were displaced in Africa last year, bringing the total in the 21 countries included in the report to 12.4 million.
They are enormous numbers, but what they provide is really a sense of urgency, first of all. So it's really a question of putting this high up on policymakers' agenda. I think there's also an opportunity for different countries to learn from each other. I mean, some of the affected countries, because they've been affected by internal displacement repeatedly over the years, have actually developed very interesting national IDP policies and strategies.
The Kampala Convention is the informal name for the African Union Convention for the Protection and Assistance of Internally Displaced Persons in Africa. It was adopted in 2009. And requires governments to protect the rights of people forced to flee their homes due to conflict. While the displacement figures for Africa for 2016 are not final yet, Bilak is pretty sure they won't improve.
As the report says, it's very unlikely that that number will have gone down in 2016, simply because we know that there have been new displacements, new movements in 2016, but also because we know that the 12.4 million people currently living in displacement are not likely to have found a durable or a sustainable solution to their displacement. So it's likely that the numbers will be either similar or slightly higher.
The director of the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center says gaps remain in gathering data on people who've been displaced for years, even decades. Bilak says international attention can wane when humanitarian crises become protracted. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Sunday, we have a special from Cameroon. Eric Aliyama, featuring his brand new album, Spirituality. Tune in at 0900 15 20 and 2200 UTC. You'll be glad you did.
Tuesday on Health Chat. Global health and human rights. We will explore the right to health and health-related human rights. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202 205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Let's chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.